You're listening to The Natural World. I'm John Cooney. Journal entry, November 1st, 7:30 a.m., West Eugene Wetlands, Meadowlark Prairie. An opaque, slate-gray cloud bank forms an effective visual lid across the valley, blocking out all views of the distant cascades while decapitating the conifer-covered peaks of the nearby South Hills and Coast Range. Early rains have softened the hardpan prairie. Puddles are beginning to form in depressions in the clay soil. A horizontal expanse of browning grass trails eastward from this covered viewing platform toward a vague band of mist that passes for a horizon. Meadowlarks are invisible in the grassy stubble but reveal their presence with tuneful vocalizations. Geese have returned to the valley from northern breeding grounds. The overcast sky is populated with several animated clusters of these honking birds. Large flocks undulate across the sky with an amoebic pulsing energy that seems to suggest a collective single-mindedness. Large flocks of Canada geese with their black head and neck and white chin strap flying in and out of misty fog banks are an iconic winter spectacle in the Willamette Valley. For millennia, temperate, moist weather and large areas of standing water on impervious soils have provided food and protection for wintering Canada geese. Their numbers have grown in recent years, causing problems for people who manage farms, golf courses, and cemeteries. In July of 2004, the American Ornithologist Union split the Canada goose into two separate species. Cackling geese are smaller and have shorter bills and longer wings than the birds that remain categorized as Canada geese. Unlike Canada geese, cacklers breed only at the very northern edge of the North American continent. Amazingly, during fall migration, they make the long journey to the Willamette Valley in 2 to 4 days of non-stop flying. The division of these birds into two separate species makes little difference to most people, and no difference at all to the geese. The species is currently defined as a group of organisms capable of interbreeding and producing fertile offspring, separated from other such groups with which interbreeding does not normally happen. This definition purposely leaves a lot of room for argument, as the concept of species is flexible and artificial. We humans have a psychological need to see the world in discrete categories. In her brilliant new book, Naming Nature, The Clash Between Instinct and Science, Carol Kasich-Yoon talks of the conflict between the real world and what biologists call our Umwelt. This German term defines our perceived world, idiosyncratic to each species, defined by its particular sensory and cognitive powers and restricted by its limitations. For instance, colors mean little to a dog, while smells create an intricate landscape unimaginable to us. There is strong evidence that our Umwelt is instinctual. Children learn the complex concepts of cow and tree very early and easily. This makes sense, as knowledge of these models would be valuable to survival. In 1984, London researchers reported the case of a university student recovering from brain damage. It seems that he could recognize inanimate objects. He knew full well what a flashlight, a compass, or a canoe were, but was mystified and unable to recognize a kangaroo, a mushroom, or a buttercup. Numerous other similar cases have led scientists to believe that we have a separate area in our brain devoted to our Umwelt. Over the last 2 centuries, most members of our species have become specialized and detached from the natural world. We have allocated the classification and comprehension of the life around us to scientists. Yet we cling to our perceptions and our Umwelt even when it conflicts with scientific evidence. Perhaps this explains why only 4 in 10 Americans say they believe in evolution, despite overwhelming scientific evidence of its validity. For all you pelican lovers, it's time to visit the coast to see these magnificent birds before they fly south to nest in the Sea of Cortez. About 13,000 brown pelicans visit the Oregon coast each year. Prior to the 1982-83 El Niño, the birds didn't show up much before June and left after November. But now, they arrive earlier and stay later each year. Often there are stragglers in December and occasionally January. Bays and estuaries play host to several kinds of ducks and geese this time of year, including surf scoters and harlequin ducks. The waterfowl attract bald eagles, and you can often see them harassing the ducks. If you have sightings or events you would like to report or suggestions of areas you would like to see profiled, you can send me email at John Cooney, that's John with an H, C-O-O-N-E-Y, at msn.com.